Listen.
Radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Thousands of people march through the Vancouver streets in the pouring rain. It's a sea of umbrellas, cardboard signs, and bright pink yarn hats. As the crowd passes Trump Tower, boos and hisses erupt at the United States President's name. One chant rises in volume. This is March on Vancouver, the next step. The second annual event following last year's Women's March, when thousands of people around the world took to the streets to protest Trump's inauguration. There are hundreds of marches like this around the world, this year in the shadow of not only Trump, but the Me Too movement. In 2017, over 15,000 people attended the Vancouver March. Today, the numbers are slimmer due largely to the characteristic Vancouver downpour. But the voices ring just as loud. There's also a more intersectional focus on this Saturday march. In 2018, members of Black Lives Matter Vancouver are here, as is trans woman sex worker Haley Heartless, members of Silent No More, and immigrant activists. And we were there too. And for today's episode of Intersections, here on CITR 101.9 FM, the Gender Empowerment Collective brings you The March. Over the next hour, you will hear the voices of the people who spoke and the people who marched. And rest assured, the volume of those voices is on the rise.
Enough is enough! Enough is enough! Enough is enough!
First, the opening of the event, led by Carlene Thomas and her niece, Rhiannon Bennett.
Anta and Sahalot, Anta Manas and Thaya Isia Max Slahotsiam, Anta Emeth Quefan Sahalot, Quest Slahotsiam. Hai Tsepka, Hai Tsepka, Mitsep, Witwilam, E. Homothquium, E. Swahotmish, E. Slawata Tama. My dear relatives and friends, the feelings I have inside are really good to see you and to be with you here today. And in Coast Salish way, I introduced myself to you with my ancestral name. I shared with you the names of my parents and my grandparents. And we do that for a number of reasons. First and foremost, it informs you that I know who I am and I know where I come from. Therefore, I know what my responsibilities and my obligations are as a Walmoch Slewata Slanai, as a First Nations woman. Then I said to you, Hai Tsepka, I'm thanking you. Me Tsep Witwilam, I'm welcoming you here on behalf of my friends and my relatives of the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh people. My heart indeed is full to see all of these faces here today. And I understand this march is an important one. And I feel as a seasoned, I think, activist, mom, sister, wife, woman, Welmoch, it's incumbent on me to gently remind you to ponder what inclusion means. I know it's important to name things, but we're naming things from a We're still naming those things from, I don't know, antagonistic type of feeling. When we should look at each other as human beings. And we have to remember that as human beings, we all have the right to be treated with respect, with integrity, and with honor. My people should not have to stand here and say, we should not have to stand here and hold this space for Wellmuk people, not only in Vancouver, or British Columbia, or Canada, indeed the world. We have to start, like my grandfather said, one of his teachings to me is we're sitting at his kitchen table, looking out his window across the inlet to Burnaby Mountain, to Capitol Hill, to Vancouver. They're not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. We have to find a way to coexist. And coexist means you're not better than me, I'm not better than you. We gotta acknowledge and hold up the gifts that were given. The artists, the speakers, the politicians, the teachers, the medicine people, the life givers, the protectors. We all hold that within us, but there's one thing that makes us special, and that gift is what we have to share with each other. We have to stand each other up, recognize it, and let our light shine, right? We have to let our light shine and let everybody else's light shine. We cannot be in competition with each other. We cannot do that. We cannot afford that. It's done. It's over. And we, as a new, maybe not new, but a more forward-thinking society, can create that by working together. Natsamat. One heart, one mind. Hi, Tsepka. Thank you, all of you.
OCM, CIET, Aitun, Squalo, and Zikwitsnala. Antha, Rhiannon Bennett, Talitsnak, Humaskwiam. My dear friends and relatives, it gives me really good feelings to see all of you here today. My auntie here has provided such a beautiful welcoming to open up this important march. I just would like to acknowledge that our cousins from Squamish were not able to be with us today, but I wanted to make sure that their name was brought forward and that each of you remember that this is our shared territory. It's really important that we acknowledge those shared territories and we really acknowledge the land that we're standing on. And it's not enough to simply cut and paste from one event to another event and to tick a box that you've acknowledged the territory. It's really important that it's more meaningful than that. We need to really do some decolonization on these stolen lands. Like my auntie said about how we need to go forward, that we're not going anywhere. You all aren't going anywhere, so it's important that we find a way to go forward, and we need to decolonize these lands. Every equity issue that brought you here today disproportionately impacts the Indigenous people of these lands. Every single issue. Those residential schools may now be closed, but there are more children in government care now than the height of those residential systems.
Shame.
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 Our women go missing disproportionately. I could go on and on, but just stop and think. Every time you see a social justice equity issue, just know without saying that it disproportionately affects the Indigenous people of these lands. Thank you. I also wanted, when I introduced myself, that my name is Rhiannon Bennett. I'm from Musqueam, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. They are not my preferred pronouns. Those are my pronouns. And I just really want to make sure that we are starting to include that language when we're out there and talking, and that we are creating inclusive spaces for all people, for all women. There's nothing preferred about people's pronouns. People's pronouns are their pronouns. It's amazing to see how many of you are here today. It's a little bit less than there was last year. But who, show of hands, just get a little exercise, warm up a little bit. Who was here last year? Nice. So those of you who were here last year may have been able to hear me speak and may have been able to hear my words. But I put it forward out there that there's a lot of privileged people standing before me today. And I ask people to use that privilege to lift up people that were below them. Have you used your privilege to help? In this day and age, it is simply not good enough not to be a racist, not to be homophobic, not to be transphobic. It is not good enough just to not be. You need to be actively doing things to dismantle these systems of oppression. The oppression that we deal with today is deliberate and intentional. So they need to be deliberately and intentionally dismantled. Colonization, imperialism, capitalism, misogyny, patriarchy, white supremacy, these are all things that are ingrained in Canadian culture. And if you are a white, cisgendered, Christian Canadian, and being called a white, Canadian, Christian, cisgendered person makes you uncomfortable, I'm really not sorry. You're going to need to work on that. If being called a white person makes you feel uncomfortable, again, I'm not sorry. You need to work on that. The reason it makes you feel uncomfortable is because you are not accustomed to being racialized. And for those BIPOC people of us in the crowd, give us a wave. Where are my BIPOC people? Come on, that's a little louder. I know you guys can make some noise. We get racialized every step we walk in this world. Every step we are racialized. The color of our skin is judged, and colorism takes a really twisted effect in Indigenous issues. Because not only are we judged by how dark we are, but we're also judged at how white we are and how pale we are. And it's really messed up. So we need to really work on that. Because this is what local Indigenous women look like. So again, it just really gives me good feelings to see all of you here today to work on making this a more equitable world. And let's ditch the word equality and let's talk about equity. Equality means all of you get a pair of shoes. Equity means all of you get a pair of shoes that fit you. So let's make sure we're talking about equity and fairness, not equality and sameness. So please, again, my call out to each of you with privilege is to use your privilege to lift up those behind you. Osea.
After Carlene and Rhiannon, the MC explains some of the history of the march.
Thank you for the warm welcome. Last year, Gloria Steinem urged us to put our bodies where our beliefs are. Sometimes pressing send is not enough. So, a year ago, 15,000 of us made history, gathering here to march on in solidarity with the worldwide movement of grassroots resistance. We turned the word ally from a noun to a verb. Today, we continue to march on because we believe that gender is a spectrum. That the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls inquiry is not complete. We march on because it is discriminatory that women earn 87 cents to men's $1, and it is even lower for women of color. Because women with disabilities and deaf women experience rates of violence 3 times higher than that of non-disabled women. We march on because we need more women in public office. We march on because consent is never implied. Coast to coast, we march on because women's rights are human rights. We at March on Vancouver want to say hello to the folks with disabilities and those who cannot be present with us. Your online presence is appreciated. Indivisible, not invisible. A lot of us are here today to say me too, either out loud or in a whisper. So before we say me too, we have to say Tarana Burke. Yes. Tarana Burke, Senior Director, she's not here by the way, I'm sorry. Senior Director of Programs for Girls for Gender Equity, identified the power of the phrase Me Too as one that could help women. She founded the Me Too movement in 2006. Me Too is a conversation between survivors, yes. An exchange of empathy, yes. And allyship, letting people know that they are not alone. Me Too is for everybody. We at March on Vancouver agree with Tarana. Sexual violence is a spectrum, knows no race, no class, no gender.
A staple of the march, much like last year, many marchers carried signs bearing witty slogans or colorful art. During the march, we asked several marchers about their signs.
Because I believe that there's still a lot of issues that need to be addressed around women's rights and the rights of women of color, and there's still attacks happening to people across the world, so I have to stand up for that.
Can you read your sign to me?
As long as women are using class or race power to dominate other women, feminist sisterhood cannot be fully realized. Bell hooks.
On one side it says Viva La Vulva, and then on the other side it says Bitches Fight Bigly, which is a reference. Trump sometimes says Bigly.
Mine says we are kind, we are smart, we are important, we are vigilant, we are brave, we are women.
I'll explain that as well. So it is a Princess Leia quote. It is a woman's place is in the resistance. She is an idol for anyone who wants to fight for what's right.
Your sign.
This sign is actually in honor of my aunt who passed away the day before Christmas Eve last year of cancer. She was actually very much a woman who fought for a lot of our rights back in like the 60s, 70s and all that. And unfortunately, the first one we were supposed to go to, a lot of marches, but because of her failing health, she couldn't come with me. So I'd usually go. This sign is actually just pretty much to honor her and to bring her with me at the same time. It means a lot, actually, because it means a lot for my younger cousins, to my aunt, my sister, my mother, who, they're survivors. They are strong women who are survivors. And me being here is to honor them for that. And even for, like, my little cousins to show change, because I don't want this world to be the same how it is for them. Feminism is, I find, is equality for all. Why can't it be for the little boys? Why can't it be for the little girls? Why can't it be for everyone? Because the thing is, as they were saying, women's rights is human's rights. We want all the same thing, don't we?
Describe your sign.
Well, my sign is a version of the This Is Fine Dog comic, which, if people aren't familiar with, it is a dog sitting in a chair drinking coffee, and everything around him is on fire, and he just says, this is fine. But in my sign, he says, this is not fine, and he's wearing a pussy hat.
And why did you choose this sign?
I wanted something that was kind of funny, that might bring a smile to people's face or make them laugh, but also got the point across that this isn't fine, what's happening. One, the Trump presidency, and I think also with recent news, all the sexual assault allegations and harassment as well that's coming out, that we're finally saying, you know, enough is enough, this isn't fine. Well, I'm marching for that, and I'm also marching to stand in solidarity with women everywhere.
What about this sign?
So the quote is a Wonder Woman quote from the newest movie, and it's when she's like given a watch and she's asked, you let this little thing tell you what to do. And I painted a clock, and it's just time's up. Time is absolutely up for people who think that sexual harassment, sexual assault, any of that being normalized, it is over for them. It is time to go.
In what many saw as an inclusive step, speakers this year included transgender woman and sex worker Haley Heartless, whose speech you will hear next.
And woman who I am proud now to call my friend. Everyone, thanks for coming out. My name is Haley Heartless, real name, no gimmicks. Yeah, all sex workers use our real names. Yeah. I love it when a man serves me like this. I'm a trans woman and I'm a sex worker. I'm a dominatrix. This is my first rally. I didn't come to last year's rally. After seeing a lot of the controversy online, a lot of the fighting, mishandling of inclusiveness for sex workers and trans women, I thought maybe I wasn't allowed to be here, so I stayed home. And I wrote my speech about twice as long as the time that they gave me, so we got to get through this. This year, when I was announced as a speaker, I received a lot of hate online from some aggressive, transphobic, whorephobic people who really, really wanted to tell me that I am not allowed to be here.
Okay, never.
I know that what we're doing is trying to build a movement, and I hear that sex workers are supposed to be part of this movement. I don't know if that's true yet or not, but if you honestly want sex workers to be part of this movement, I'll help you lay the foundation. I know this discussion might be difficult for a lot of us to hear. Sex worker rights is a very emotional issue. But the fact that we have a lot of strong feelings about it isn't a reason to not talk about it. Sex work is work, and sex worker rights are human rights. I know it can be difficult to look inside ourselves when we might have said things or done things that might have hurt sex workers or people in the past, and commit to change. But this isn't about what we've said or done in the past. This is about laying the foundation for a new movement, a movement that includes sex workers.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask that you listen to me with an open heart and an open mind. I'm here to share my truth. And as a feminist, when women are sharing their truth, we listen. There's a lot of things I'd like to say, a lot of messages I'd like to deliver, but I think if we're going to build a foundation of a movement, I need to talk about the main barrier we have entering feminist spaces, and that's stigma. Mm-hmm. Stigma is weaponized to keep us out of feminist spaces. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk a lot about a lot of different subjects. I'm going to touch on them, but my hope is not to give you the answers, but to lay a foundation so sex workers can come into your spaces and answer some of those questions for you.
Thank you.
So given that it's such a broad subject, I'll just share some of the ways we face stigma in feminist and social justice movements. We faced it recently in the Me Too movement when well-meaning people would tell violators, just hire a sex worker. Yeah. It's one thing to tell someone to hire a sex worker when They want a third for their threesome, or they want to get a spanking. It's a totally different thing to tell them to hire a sex worker when they habitually harm women. We're not here as an outlet for sex offenders. If they violate your boundaries, they're going to violate ours, so don't push them on us. We face stigma when people conflate voluntary sex work with sex trafficking. Trafficking is to sex work what rape is to consensual sex. And conflating the two is a knife that cuts both ways. It harms sex workers by denying us our agency and our right to consent. And it also hurts the victims of trafficking by trivializing and comparing the horrors that they suffer to the work that we do. Trafficking survivors are speaking, women like Laura Lamoon, but they're being drowned out by self-proclaimed prostitution experts who call any form of sex work trafficking. Thank you, Mom. And the only people who seem to be doing any active work that I see are actual sex workers. Sex workers can be your greatest ally in fighting trafficking. We see it on our chat boards. We're on the street level where it does happen. It affects our bottom lines and it lowers the bar for our health and safety standards at work. We want to stamp it out, but if you keep calling us victims of trafficking and you keep perpetuating that stigma, it silences our voices and binds our hands. We face stigma from feminists who push us into narratives that we're either divas or victims. Narratives that tell us if we're not empowered all the time, we're victims. Sex work is the only job where you need to feel empowered all the time for people to consider it valid. We're not allowed to have a bad day. We're not even allowed to have a boring day at the office. This makes us afraid to share our stories because we don't want to be pigeonholed into one narrative or the other. Placing us in a position where we're either on a pedestal or we're victims keeps our wisdom and our stories confined to our own community. Sex work is real work, and a lot of times it's not much different from other work where we have contact with our clients. It's just something we do either every day or on the weekends. It involves a lot of boring aspects like bookkeeping, filing taxes, keeping receipts, building a website, and creating a social media presence. It's work, it's what we do. There's no need to pretend it's something extraordinary or exotic. We face stigma from activists who refuse to call us sex workers, but instead call us prostitutes. This language is owned by police and the prison system. It's designed to rob us of our agency. Some of us are reclaiming that language and use it with each other, but when an outsider calls us a prostitute, the message is clear. You think lesser of us. You think of us as victims, and you steal our voice. Instead of saying prostitute, use the language that we use to talk about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Sex worker, hands-on sex worker, full-service sex worker, service provider. Mm-hmm. When you use language of people trying to cause us harm, you're sending a message of exclusion. We face stigma from laws that deny us of our agency, laws that treat us as victims and our clients as criminals, laws that make it illegal for us to work together for safety or negotiate consent openly, laws that make it so both I and my colleague can be charged with trafficking each other if we work together for safety or fun. These laws advocated for people outside of the industry who claim to want to protect us, make it easier for us to be manipulated and controlled. People we allow into our lives can threaten to have us fired from our day jobs, have our children taken away, have us evicted. These laws, like the Nordic model or asymmetric criminalization, are preached by outsiders. We're not you, but we know what you need better than you do, and we're going to give it to you. This is the work of a savior, not an ally. A savior believes they're better than the people they're trying to help, but an ally lifts our voices. and centers us in solutions. So don't be a savior. It doesn't make any sense to advocate for solutions or spaces without the input of the people directly affected. In social justice circles, there's a saying, it comes from disability rights, it says, nothing about us without us. There can be no solutions and no inclusive movement without giving us agency and the right to advocate for our own needs. And when there's a crisis, we face stigma from rape crisis centers who sometimes turn us away or place the blame on us because of who we are and what we do. Even rape crisis centers that will allow us in often have policies behind the scenes that rob us of agency and treat us as victims. So even though they won't turn us away, you can't really call it a safe and accepting space. When you welcome us into your spaces and allow us to be open and honest, you'll find we have so much knowledge to bring you. And it's not just about how to have amazing sex. We can teach you life skills, like how to take good selfies. Buy a selfie stick. We can teach you how to use Bitcoin. We can teach you how to build a following on social media. We can teach you lessons about yourself, like how to practice excellent hygiene. How to do amazing contouring for low-light venues. How to practice radical self-care. We can also teach you valuable lessons about boundaries and consent, and how to quickly spot potentially harmful people. Sex workers need feminism, and feminism needs sex workers. Hopefully you take away some of these lessons, you change your behavior, you listen to the stories sex workers are telling you, and you stop conflating sex work with abuse. Hopefully you can call in your comrades when you witness whorephobia. Don't use the word whorephobia if you're not a sex worker, by the way. All it takes to create a space for intolerance and exclusion is for allies to say nothing when they witness it. Hopefully next year you can have someone else on this podium sharing their truth, and they can proudly declare, I am a sex worker, and I am allowed to be here.
Variety of different factors. I think the aspect of today that really stood out for me and I think was extremely groundbreaking was Haley Heartbreaker talking. So she's a trans woman sex worker. And those are voices that you rarely hear about. And I think that those stories are, like, hearing those voices are so important. I know a lot of sex workers in Vancouver, and I think that, you know, having that more exposed is incredibly important. Yeah, especially given some of the history that Vancouver has with the disappearance of women from the downtown east side. Yeah.
Another big step for the march this year was the inclusion of members of Vancouver Black Lives Matter. Here's what they had to say.
Thank you, Haley. Our next speakers are from Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter Vancouver is committed to undoing systemic racialized violence through advocacy and centering the voices of Black folks and other folks of color, while also lifting up the voices of those who are marginalized. They have two members speaking on their behalf today. Ariam is a clinical psychology student who works with several BC organizations to help immigrants and refugees adjust to living in Canadian society. She joined Black Lives Matter because of concerns about police brutality and the modern slavery of Black refugees. Azuka is a mental health outreach worker and community organizer. He stands in solidarity with the worldwide fight for decolonization and joins in the battle against poverty and toxic masculinity. Thank you, Black Lives Matter, Ariam and Azuka.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's really nice to see a lot of people here and to hear what we have to say. It's important to me. It's important to people that look like me. It's important to people that represent me. And I want to thank you very much first. We would like to acknowledge that this event takes place on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and the Squamish nations. On these, thank you, on whose territories we live and organize. We would like to also recognize the tremendous labor that has gone into nurturing and protecting this traditional lands and the many ways in which indigenous resistance has deeply informed our own activism. So thank you so much. As many of you know, Black Lives Matter has a lot of controversy, but I would like to tell you what it is and what we stand for. Who is Black Lives Matter? The official Black Lives Matter organization was funded by Patrice, Opal, Alicia, which are three Black women that started an online forum intended to build connections between Black people and our allies to fight anti-Blackness, racism, to spark a dialogue among Black people and to initiate the types of connections necessary to engage and to encourage social actions and engagements. We've been on a brief, Black Lives Matter Vancouver has been on a brief hiatus to make sure that we have the right tools and to keep fighting white supremacy and making sure that our members don't burn out. As you may know, there is a huge population of Black folks, but the system is so built against us that we can't even reach to other Black people, and it's hard to be fighting white supremacy when we don't have the resources. But I'm happy to also announce that we will be back full-on activism in February, the most important month for Black people, which is Black History Month. So we would also like to acknowledge a little bit of Vancouver history that a lot of you don't know, a lot of you do not know, which is Hogan's Alley. Hogan's Alley was a thriving Black community that was located in Georgia Strait. Like many of you don't know, there was a thriving Black community, but the government decided to build the Georgia Strait Bridge right in the middle of a Black community, which has dispersed a lot of Black people, which we don't have a community or the resources to have a support system. But I'm happy to also announce that we are rebuilding the community and we'll be back on our feet just like how we always do. So this is just to remind people that don't look like me, that don't represent me, to remind you that we're still here, we're still fighting, we're still gonna exist, and our community is gonna be back on its feet in February, and I would like to give them a shout out for the people that are fighting for Hogan's Alley to rebuild the community. So if we can give them a hand, please. On the conversation about feminism, something that touches me as a Black woman, something that I don't feel like that represent me and represents the lack of validity for Black women, for trans Black women, for Black women that have a lot of intersectionality. And I would just like to remember Tarana Brooke. I know that some of you've mentioned before me, but I would like to acknowledge a Black woman that started the Me Too hashtag that many of you might have heard. She's a Black woman that has also started an online forum just like the hashtag Black Lives Matter that started speaking about the sexual harassment for a lot of people, not just women, for a lot of people, speaking about these incidents, but a continuous thing in the workplace, in homes, in families, a lot of these places, which she gave an online forum for people to have support system, for them to be able to share these experiences and find a support system. So I would really love to acknowledge Tarana Brooke as well. I would also like to... This is something that is really close to me as I am a Black woman, not only a Black woman, but an immigrant. And This really touches me because I do have family members that have gone through this. This is the slave trade in Africa. We would also like to remember the Black lives across the world, not just in North America, but across the world, that your life matters, that we're here for you, whether in Africa, whether in Europe, whether here, we're here for you. And we would like to remember our brothers and sisters that are going through to this day because of the slave trade in Africa, especially in Libya. We recently had a protest in December that was against the slave trade in Libya, and we will have one in February. So if we can have the same turnout, that would show that you guys care for Black lives as much as you care for other women that don't look like me. So I would love to see your support to see this many people out here, but not to see this many people out here to fight for my existence. So I would like to call you out. I would like to call everybody out here that when we have our next protest, that you will be here to support me, to support the people that look like me, and to support those who are not with me. Thank you. I'd also, lastly, to I would like to acknowledge our people that I don't represent, like LGBT community. There are Black people that are not represented in this community. So I would like to remember them. I would like to remember a lot of the trans women, trans Black women who started a lot of the movements that are now here that were able to speak. It's because of these trans Black women. I would like to remember them as well. And we would also like to acknowledge the past events where our voice was not considered important enough for us to come here and show our representation up, to show our faces, that we exist in Vancouver. Because a lot of times we're not to say invited, but we're not considered in movements. Whereas we started the movement, a lot of the reasons that you guys are here is because of Black women. I would like to acknowledge that as well. And I would also like to thank the organizers for reaching out to us and letting us know that our voices are important, our lives are important. People that look like me are important. People that represent me are important. And I would like to say thank you so much. And that means a lot to me as I carry so many intersectional identities, but being Black is number one. Thank you. Power to the people. If there is anybody that would like to reach out to Black Lives Matter, if you're a Black person that wants to join us, we encourage that. Please come to Azuka. Thank you. Peace.
One of the final and most rousing speakers was Noor Fadel.
I met this young lady last year. She was barely 18 and came to some of the March On people and said, I want to have a march about peace, and I want to walk up to Trump Tower and, you know, make a statement. I've never done a march before. Can you help us? And we were like, sure, sure. We didn't have to do much because she pretty well had it all organized in her brain anyway. Later on in the year, Noor, my friend, was attacked on the SkyTrain. While she sat there being harassed by a white supremacist who smacked her in the face, nobody on the SkyTrain did anything. Yay! But one young man. I have to say I was shocked. I was horrified that type of thing would happen on the SkyTrain in Vancouver. That is devastating. But nothing gets this person down. Everyone, meet Noor Fadel. Thank you.
have this problem.
We love you, Noor.
Assalamu alaikum. May peace be upon you. Sorry, you guys. It's a big crowd, big moment for me. A lot of you guys may know me as the Muslim woman who was attacked on the SkyTrain, but I want to introduce myself the right way. My name is Noor Fidel, born and raised in Canada. My parents are from Iraq. Muslim. I'm 18 years old. I'm a poet. I'm an activist, and I want to change the world. Through the moment, I was going through a lot. I was introduced to so many people who showed me so much positivity and support. And I met one girl in particular. And she's speaking at the Women's March in Washington. Her name is Wala. We sat down, we met, and I told her I want to write a poem for this event. She's like, what do you want to write it about? And I said, about what happened. And she's like, okay. Imagine yourself in a white room filled with white walls, a table, and two chairs. You and the man who attacked you. And he had to listen to everything you said. What would you tell him at that moment? And I closed my eyes and I said, I forgive you. And here's what I came up with. I forgive you. I forgive you for the voices that have been hung in the name of you. Choked in the idea of truth, I suffocate to cry my name out in the ears of a deaf man. I play the drums of sadness only to see you dance. Our tears have become music to your ears. Blindly dance our ways to a path of shame. A shame that gripped our back, tore our identity, and expected us to apologize. I am not sorry. I am human whose voice has been invaded by labels, conquered by your ideology of who I am and who we are. Our choices now being used against us, wrapping around our necks, suffocating to speak our truth because you do not know ours. You do not know our stories, our strengths. Everything we are is a blank canvas covered by layers of your ignorance we cannot paint. But painted in blood, in silence, our brushes tell stories no mankind could carry our strength. Heard beyond our borders, beyond your knowledge, our stories are the kinds our children will read, written in our eyes and in the scars you imprinted in our flesh. Yet here we are, speaking our truth. I sing the songs of the tales we hear but deny seeing. I cry the tears of the pain hundreds of us feel but cannot speak. Our tongues twisted with doubt and second thoughts. What will society think of me? What will I think of me? I am unbreakable. The power we carry is not in the shape of our bodies or the layers of our skin, rather the depths in our heart, the thickness in our blood, for us to speak, for us to forgive, for us to challenge ourselves and the boundaries they have set on us. We are not a base or a start. We are the finish line for the voices who were inspired to speak up. We are the journey, a path we walk on together, stand on together, speak up together. We are not sorry for taking the gun from your hands and the bullets from your word and your grip. We will not apologize for stepping on stage to reveal the strings you hang on to us. Silence unknown to our mouths as we speak our truth and will continue to be the sound of our constant battle. We unify together. I forgive you. I forgive you for your misconceptions of me, your hateful words and actions, for the violence you forced upon me. I forgive you for the times the screens became your truth as our stories became you to your ears. You tried to hurt me thinking like you were right, but you were wrong. You took an opportunity, shattered it to pieces, yet I was the glass that cut into your ignorance. Violence was your solution. Yet I was yet relentless, my voice, I built an empire around your hate. I forgive you for the journey that misled you into believing what was wrong, for believing I was hate by you being hateful. You will never know our stories, and we may never know yours. Yet life moves on whether we choose to continue or not. I gripped tight to the handle and held myself up, climbed over the hills and saw the view of fields. I tumbled, but I survived, and you couldn't stop me. No one could stop me. I forgive you, but I will never be sorry, because this is our truth. This is my truth. Thank you.
After all of the speeches were done and the crowd had rounded the final corner back to Jackpool Plaza, we asked women marching what the march and feminism in general meant to them.
It means equity for women, better pay for women, equal pay for women, equal rights for women, all about women, 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 women.
It means to me my children grow up knowing that no matter who they are or what they do in life, that they are accepted. This is hard for me because intersexuality, or I'm not even sure I'm using the words correctly.
Intersectionality.
Well, see, sexuality. No, I have to say something that's very important to me. I'm a proud aunt of a transgender male. I do not believe that there was representation today acknowledging the struggles of transgender men. I understand this is a march for women's equality. However, this is a part of the society that we also need to acknowledge.
Well, I actually felt that today's march was well represented by a lot of different women. There's a lot of women of colour, a lot of Native women. It was really good to see the solidarity. It was really good to see the power and to feel the power. Not a lot of women with disabilities were here. The weather was shitty. So, you know, there's probably a reason for it. But
This is my second time doing the march. And, a couple things. I moved to Canada in March and decided that even though I left the United States, I'm here to also resist in Canada because I think that we have problems here, too, in Canada, but I think we muddle through them differently. But I still think that I need to resist here as well with the world and problems that are worldwide. And so, yeah.
Did you move to Canada because of Trump's presidency?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, we both did.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that this the past few months with the Me Too movement and stuff is really being unearthed about women and inequality and as you call it, privilege, especially like the film industry, the entertainment industry, we're starting to see stuff come out about inequality in pay between men and women and in entertainment. And it's way worse than I realized. I had no idea. And that's an example of privilege, you know. I mean, men in many situations get paid more to do the same job a woman does. And it's still here, and I in 2018, it's like I thought, you know, my mom lived through it, but we're still battling, you know, this problem. So for me, I feel it, you know, as a woman, I feel like, wow, you know, I know I get paid less than this guy, and I know we're doing the same job, so I have to say, I get that, and I'm not sure how we're going to fix it, but I'm glad that it seems like it's really coming out. Yeah. Like, it's finally being talked about, which is good.
I think intersectionality was the big keyword at today's march. My daughter and I were talking about it coming down here, that intersectional feminism is something that's really important these days, and that was really clear with all of the speakers at today's march, that it's so much about so much more than just feminism. It's about racial identity, and it's about sexual identity, and it's about ability, and even in some cases it's about vocation. People who have privilege should use their privilege to bring everybody up. And that's something I struggle with at this point. I would like to do that to whatever extent I can, but I don't really know how to. So part of my homework after today is to search for better ways to bring everybody up and to use my privilege for good, mm-hmm. I guess. Part of the reason I didn't come to the march last year was because I felt it possibly wasn't really my fight to fight, that I'm not an American and Trump has limited power over me. But however, he is in our media, even here in Canada, every single day, it seems, and I would really like to move past that and to start working towards many of the other women's issues that exist outside of Trump.
Yeah, definitely.
I think
Today, the march is really relevant in this cultural climate, especially with the Me Too movement, and I think there's a cultural kind of reckoning for how women want to be, equity, and want to be in the world. So, anyway, it's just important to me as a feminist that you kind of show up and support people who, use your privilege to be able to show your support.
There's been a lot of momentum and like some good change in terms of like women gaining and taking some power in when they, you know, have been talking about this Me Too movement. So that has definitely been like an awesome thing, and I was actually way more excited for it this year, especially because the Vancouver March was intersectional and highlighted, you know, lots of people's stories that are different than, you know, many different types of stories that are all part of the woman experience. Yeah.
With the Me Too movement, it's very much online, and it's really nice to have a space where we're all together and actually listening to different stories and getting different ideas and being physically in the same space. That was really powerful.
Place with no solution in sight.
I'm looking for my sister. Where does she go? Where does she go? Why? I'm looking for my sister. Where does she go? Where does she go? Why?
This episode included reporting from members of CITR's Gender Empowerment and Accessibility Collectives. Thanks to Zoe Power, Jess Mackey, Desi Nair, Sarah Dada, and Hannah Toms. The episode was edited by me, Melanie Woods. Playing us out is JB the First Lady, who performed the song Sisters at the March, a recording of which you'll hear right now. For more information on intersections and the CITR Gender Empowerment Collective, head to CITR.ca/programs/intersections.
Oh, how I miss you so much. I still can't believe that you're gone. Feels like a huge piece of me's been torn. I'm ripping me from my chest. I can't breathe when I think about it. I miss your smile, miss your laugh. I miss us on a powwow trail. And now all I feel is a trail of tears, a trail of fears. What could have gone wrong? And hoping that you're safe. I wanna go door to door. My eyes are too sore from all the tears that drop. My heart drops, and every time I think about you and where you could be, this is for the way to carry on my chest. For the mothers and the daughters who get no rest. And this is for the loved ones and the family. We want you close, we wanna hold you close, we want you back the most. And this is for my sisters who were stolen in the night. For the ones who were hustling and fighting for their lives. It cuts to the soul, but it has me wondering, oh, where did she go? Oh, where did she go?
I'm looking for my sister. Where did she go? Where did she go? Why? I'm looking for my sister. Where did she go? Where did she go? Why? I wanna walk the highways. I wanna walk the alleys and the streets. I wanna walk the whole damn world. I wanna walk the highway. I wanna walk the alleys and the streets. I wanna walk the whole damn world. I'm looking for my sister. Where did she go? Where did she go? Why? Why no sense of urgency? Why no state emergency? Should have been caught when it was 2 or 3. 100 to 1,000, yeah, you feel me. Governments criminalize indigenous men and blame them and then say it's not hot on our radar. How far will you let it slide? Just another form of genocide. That's right, I'm calling you out. I know what this is all about. You want the land, so now we stand. We stand up, fist up, warriors up. Makes us strong, we say no more.
It's our pledge drive here on NPR, and we have a 20-minute field recording of a tumluku, which is a Bosnian instrument which can only be played when you have a pierced scrotum and 3 kids who have been killed by a landmine. It's unlistenable radio! You understand me?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Totally listenable radio.